Today's daf is Bavitzia daf Kuf Tes Zayin. We're right in the middle of an inyan, though, that starts on daf Kuf Tes Vav Amar Aleph, really. So just to quickly summarize what the inyan revolves around, and that is the Machlokas Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda regarding the halacha that the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to take as a mashkon items that involve ochel nefesh, and the pasuk specifically identifies rechayim v'rechem, that the two parts of a mill which are items that are used for ochel nefesh purposes and therefore not allowed to be taken as a mashkon. And then the pasuk says a broader phrase that's more general, ki nefesh hu chavel. So Rav Huna says that when you take either of these kelim, the rechayim or the rechev, you get malchus for taking that particular kli, plus you get malchus for the more general iser of ki nefesh hu chavel. If you take both of them, you get malchus, you get three malchios, one for each kli, plus the general iser. Rav Yehuda said, no, for each kli, you get malchus, you get a single malchus. If you take both of them, you get two malchios. But you don't get a third malchus for the broader iser of ki nefesh uchavel, because that's not really about rechayim v'rechev. The phrase ki nefesh uchavel is coming to teach me about all other items that involve ochel nefesh, that all other kelim of ochel nefesh that are not rechayim v'rechev are included through the phrase ki nefesh uchavel. So the Gemara had suggested that perhaps that machlokas Rav Huna Yehuda mirrors a machlokas Abaye and Rava regarding the achila of the Karban Pesach, where you have a specific iser of not eating it mevushal and not eating another specific iser of not eating it na, and a more general iser of ki and tzli esh, that you're only allowed to eat it tzli esh, as a roasted item on the fire. So the Gemara tried to distinguish between the two machloksim and to say that just because you hold that you're going to get what you hold regarding the Karban Pesach is not going to affect what you hold regarding the taking of the mashkon. So we were in the middle of expressing Abaye's opinion. We'll start again from two lines from the bottom. Kuftes vavim beis. V'Abaye amalach anoda amri afilu Rav Huna. Abaye would tell you that I could even agree with Rav Huna. Again, Rav Huna is the one who was the first shita who said that you get malchus not only on each individual kli but also on the general iser. So Abaye would say I might even agree with Rav Huna. Ad kan lo kam Rav Huna hasam el dechi nefesh uchavel yaseiruhu kivin de yaseiruhu shad yarechayim v'rechev. Rav Huna would say that you get malchus on the general iser of kinefesh uchavel because it's totally extra. It's not used for anything in particular, and since it's extra, it makes sense that it's talking about when you take as a mashkon a rechayim v'rechev, that it's coming to add an extra iser on taking the rechayim v'rechev. Aval hacha, but over here, what's the general iser? Ki im tzliyesh. Lav yaseiruhu, but the phrase kiim tzliyesh in the pasuk is not extra. Dimibayle lechadetanya, we actually need it for the following brisa. B'shah sheyeshno b'kum echal tzli, yeshno b'bal tochalna. B'shah sheyeno b'kum echal tzli, eino b'bal tochalna. That the iser of eating Karban Pesach of Bal Tochalna is only when the mitzvah of Kum Echol Tzli applies. Meaning one could have reasonably thought that the iser of Bal Tochalna, of not eating the Karban Pesach raw or not eating the Karban Pesach cooked, one could have reasonably thought that applies the second you're miyached the Karban. Even prior to the Zman Achila of the Karban Pesach, one might have thought that it's even days before Pesach that one could be in violation of the Isser. So that's why the Braisa is Mechadish. No, it's only at the time that you can get the mitzvah of Kum Echol Tzli, only at the time where eating it roasted is meaningful and is a Kiyum HaMitzvah, which is specifically the first night of Pesach, only then would you be in violation of Bal Tochalna. Only then would that Isser, would the Isser apply. Only when the mitzvah applies, the Isser applies. The mitzvah and the Isser are twin mitzvahs over here. The Gemara had said, just to backtrack a little bit, that ad kan lo kam Rabbi Yehuda hasam eladuchi nefesh uchavel amashma rechayim v'rechev, that when Rava was defending himself, Rava was saying he would even go like Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda only says his shita because nefesh uchavel is a general phrase and doesn't specifically refer to rechayim v'rechev, as opposed to kiyum tzliyesh, where it has to refer to tzliyesh versus what? obviously refers to not eating it cooked, not eating it raw. By tzli eish, the very words mean that you're not eating it cooked, you're not eating it raw. Tosos in Dibur HaMaschil, Shenemar says that you don't need a pasuk for shar dvarim because you can learn those shar dvarim from Rechayim Varechev through a mematzinu. You don't need a separate phrase in the pasuk would be unnecessary to teach me according to this view. Shar dvarim, because that other items of ochel nefesh you're also not allowed to take as a mashkon, because if the Torah already specifies you're not allowed to take Rechayim Varechev as a mashkon, obviously you're not allowed to take shar dvarim as a mashkon either, other items of ochel nefesh either. It's a simple mematzinu. Why would we distinguish between Rechayim Varechev on the one hand versus versus cutlery on the other hand that you use for ochel nefesh? Whatever it is that you use for ochel nefesh is obviously going to be included. However, if that's the pshat, that the reason that we don't need that, the reason we don't need that phrase of kinefesh uchavel l'shar dvarim, meaning the reason Rav Huna does not need it to teach me l'shar dvarim is because of a mematzinu, the question becomes that if we could have learned it from a mematzinu, what do you mean we could have learned it from a mematzinu? Can you give malchus based on the mematzinu? Meaning this is an isser for which one gets malchus for. So if it's an isser that you get malchus for, so learning from a mematzinu, don't we have a concept of ein onshin min adin? That if there's only a, if we derive an isser from a kal v'chomer, that you don't get malchus for it. So wouldn't the same apply when you learn something from a mematzinu? So the truth is, it's a major machlokes rishonim. We've mentioned it before. Whether you can get malchus for an isser that's derived by a mematzinu, the Ran holds that by a mematzinu we say onshin min adin, that you can get malchus based on such a limud of a mematzinu. Tosos and the Rush both hold that even by a mematzinu that we say ein onshin min adin. That even when it comes to a mematzinu, just like we say by a kal v'chomer ein onshin min adin, we say by a mematzinu ein onshin min adin. So Rav Yosef Engel, the Ason D'Oraisan, Simon Chaf Hei, and I believe we mentioned this in the past, points out that this machlokes rishonim, whether we would say onshin min adin by a mematzinu or not, is totally on how you understand the concept of ein onshin min adin. Why is it that we don't give an onesh based on the kal v'chomer? According to the Marsha, there are three reasons, by the way. According to the Marsha, ein onshin min adin is because someone who does an avera that's more severe can't achieve a kapara with an onesh that's prescribed for the less severe iser. So I can't say, look, if a person does this, it's an iser. Kal v'chomer, if he does the more severe thing, it's an iser, and therefore he should get the same punishment. No, punishment's not just there to punish the person, it's there to give him a kapara. So it could be that if a person gets malchus, let's say, for a less severe iser, that malchus isn't going to suffice for the more severe iser. And therefore, ein onshin min adin. So if you can say like that, that's true when you have a kala and a chamura. But by a mematzinu, there's no kal and chamur. You have two equally severe isurim. In which case, maybe then you would say onshin min adin. You would say that I'll apply the onesh of A to isur B, even though it doesn't say it in the Torah explicitly by isur B. There's no kal and chamur. It's logical that if that onesh is going to work for isur A, it will also work for isur B, which is equal to it. It's dafka by a kal v'chomer where it's problematic. The second day in why we say ein onshin min adin, the Rabbi Yosef Engel quotes, is from the Shoshanas HaAmakim, who says that the reason we don't say, well, the reason we're not on it, we don't give an onesh min adin from based on the kal v'chomer, is because we're always nervous that maybe someone's going to come up with a pircha in the kal v'chomer. Maybe our kal v'chomer is not perfect. Maybe we're missing something. And what we think is kal is really chomer. What we think is chomer is really kal. Maybe the tzushtel isn't perfect. Maybe the equation that we're making isn't really perfect and we're missing something. Well, if that's the case, and that's why we don't want to be ma'anish a person min adin, then we could understand that by a mematzinu also, we would say ein onshin min adin. Because maybe our limud is not perfect. Maybe we're missing something in our mematzinu. Maybe there's a distinguished distinguishing characteristic between these two cases that we simply missed, that we're simply unaware of. So that's the second day of Enon Shemir Adin. And that would certainly fit with the Shita, that you would say Enon Shemir Adin, even by Mamatsinu. The third Shita of Enon Shemir Adin is because it could just simply be, the Shita of the Re'eim, is that it could simply be that when the Torah is Mechadesh to us, that there is an Isser, so through Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, the Midosh HaTorah and Drashas Ben suggest that Enon Shemir Adin, meaning simply that we're that's Kach Neskabla Amida, that the Midosh HaTorah and Drashas Ben dictates to us that we can give the Onesh by the Isser that it says it, that the Torah says so explicitly, but not by other Isserim that we only learn out from a din. And if that's the case, it can go either way in terms of whether we apply to a Mamatzinu. It depends how the Halach L'Moshe Misinai was Neskabel, what the rules were. And it's a Metzius question of what the rules that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us were. It's a question of what our true Mesorah is. So if that's the explanation of Enon Shemir Adin, you can understand like either Shita in Rishonim. Okay, Vaitu in the Gemara. We're about six lines from the top of the page on Daf Kuf Tezayin Amun Aleph. Tanya Kavasid Rav Yehuda. So we have a Brisa that supports Rav Yehuda. Again, Rav Yehuda was the one who said that although you get Malkus independently for the Chevel and for the Rechayim, you get Malkus for the Rechev and the Rechayim, rather, you get Malkus separately for each part of the mill. You're not going to get this broader Malkus for broad phrase of Ki Nefesh Hu Chavel. So we have a Brisa that supports Rav Yehuda in that sense, and it's not really a Brisa that supports Rav Yehuda, it's a combination of two Brisas that when taken together support Rav Yehuda. Tani Kavasid Rav Yehuda. Chavel Zug Shel Saparin. If a person takes as a mashkon the scissors, a barber's scissors, Vitzemet Shel Paros, or he takes the yoke of cows, that's a twin yoke, Chayiv Shtayim, he's Chayiv twice, because these are Kalim that are made of two different parts, so it's as if it's two separate Kalim. Zeba Atzmo, Vezeba Atzmo, Einu Chayiv Ela Achas. But if he takes only one half of it, he takes the half of the twin yoke, or half of the scissor. The scissor is made of two blades that were not like our scissors where they're combined together into one kli. There were two blades that were that you could separate from each other, so each one is its own kli. So if he takes only half, he's only chayev one for each one. Vitanya idach, but that alone is not yet a raya. Vitanya idach, right? And Rashi says the gear, so we have to be careful, is not Tanya idach, it's Vitanya idach. If it were Tanya idach, it would imply that the second price is not connected to the first. Vitanya idach shows us that we need the two brises together in order to understand what the raya is going to be. Vitanya idach, we have a second brisa. Chaval zug shel saparim etzemet shel paros yachal lo yehichay vela achas. If a person takes as a mashkon the barber's scissors or the yoke of the cows, so you might think he's only chayev once. Tamalomar lo yachbal rechayim v'rechev. That's why we have a pasuk that says lo yachbal rechayim v'rechev. Ma rechayim v'rechev shein miyuchad in shnei kelim v'osam malacha achas. V'chayev al zeh b'fnei atzmo v'al zeh b'fnei atzmo. Just like by rechayim v'rechev, what do we know about them? They're two separate kelim, but they both combine to do the same job. And nevertheless, you're chayev for each kli independently. Av kol devarim shein shnei kelim miyuchadin va'osin melacha achas. So too, anytime you have two distinct kelim, but they combine together, they work together, they team up together to do the same job, chayev al zeh b'fnei atzmo v'al zeh b'fnei atzmo. You're chayev for each one independently. What's the raya to Rav Yehuda? Again, what we're looking for is a raya to the shita that holds that when you take rechayim v'rechev, you take both of them, that you're only going to be chayiv twice and not a third malchus for the broader issur of kinefesh u'chovel. Where do we see that in these brisos? So if you look at Rashi, if you look at the Rashi Dibur Maskal Afkal, he says as follows: from the fact that we compare the case of the zug shel saparim to rechayim v'rechev, shmamina b'rechayim v'rechev chayiv nami shtayim ka'amar. From the fact that we equate the two cases and we said explicitly by the zug shel saparim that you're chayiv shtayim, that you get two malkios, the implication is that by rechayim v'rechev, if you take them both, you're only chayiv shtayim, two malkios, and not three malkios like Rav Huna held. So that's a riot Rav Yehuda, v'lo shalosh, v'haynuk Rav Yehuda, and that's exactly the riot Rav Yehuda. Frek Rashi though, wait a second. Why did we need both prices to teach us that? Meaning, if the main point is that we compare Rechayim Varechav to Zug Shel Saparim, so we only need Brisa number two, really. Because Brisa number two is the Brisa that made that comparison explicitly, that said that just like Rechayim Varechav are two separate Kelim that team up to do a single job, and you get separate Malkios for them, so too Zug Shel Saparim. Don't you have it all right there? You have everything you need right there. Why do we need the first brisa? You already have the comparison between Rechayim Varechav and Zug Shel Saparim in the second brisa. Frek Rashi Vim Tomar is like a Tosus Rashi Vim Tomar. Masnisan Kamais and the Mayaisa. Hachanami Shaminilami Basraisa. Don't we get everything we need from the second brisa? Elami Basraisa from the latter brisa. Chayev al Zeba Atzmo val Zeba Atzmo Ka'amar. You'll note that in the second brisa it never said Chayev Shtayim. It didn't say Yechayev twice. It said Chayev al Zeba Atzmo val Zeba Atzmo. It said Yechayev for each of them individually. But that could mean the laws in Basar Malach al Basar Kelim, which just is Mechadish to us, that you don't look at the job that the Kelim do, you look at how many Kelim there are. And if there are two Kelim that do the same job together, you don't say it's one Malchus, you would say that's two separate Malchios. But it could be that's two separate Malchios for those Kelim, but there's also a third Malchus for the general Isra of Kinefesh Uchavel. It could be that there's this broader Malchus that you're also going to get from that second brisa. The second brisa never specified the number two. Uliyolam Sholosh Malchios. Achas Mishum Rechev, Viachas Mishum Rechayim, Viachas Mishum Kinefesh. It could really be that there are three Malchios. One for the Rechev, one for the Rechayim, and one for Kinefesh. Dekaya Travayu, because Kinefesh goes on both of them. And that's why we need the first brisa, because the first brisa is explicit that you only get two Malkios. So when you combine these two brisas, that's where you see that you have ultimately a raya to the sheet of Rav Yehuda. Now this Zug Shel Saparim, we translate it based on the way Rashi translates it, that it's a barber's scissor. The Rush asks that the misparayim that our barbers use aren't used for any ochel nefesh purposes. And we're trying to give an example of things that are used for ochel nefesh, right? You're not allowed to take a mashkon for something that's ochel nefesh. So the Rush asks on Rashi, why would that be an example? Why would Zug Shel Saparim possibly be an example of something that's used for ochel nefesh purposes? And the Rush says, I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me that for the barber, it's his bread and butter. Meaning for the barber, if he needs those scissors to make a living, to put food on his table. So it's ochel nefesh. So the Rush says, if that's the case, everything is a kli for ochel nefesh. Because people use, all kelim can be used to make money. So any kli that's used to make money that ultimately is going to put food on the table is ochel nefesh. No. Ochel nefesh kelim mean things that are used directly with food preparation. That's what an ochel nefesh kli is. It's hard to say Zug Shel Saparim, a barber's scissor, is an ochel nefesh kli. So it says, computer would be an ochel nefesh kli because people work in IT. No, it doesn't. So says the Rush, Zug Shel Saparim must mean something else. He says it's not Zug Shel Saparim, it's Zug Shel Misparayim, and which just means a pair of scissors. Once your gori is Misparayim and not Saparim, it's not, Sapar means a barber, Misparayim just means scissors. So once your gori is that, so the Rush says what it really means is the scissors that you cut vegetables from your vegetable garden with. And that's obviously very clearly an ochel nefesh. The Ran and the Nemuka Yosef are goreis like Rashi, that it's a barber's scissors, and they say in Achinami, all kelim that are used to make a living are in fact ochel nefesh kelim. That we do view ochel nefesh even if it's indirect, even if it's not kelim used directly in food preparation, if they are kelim used in making a living to put food on your table, that too is considered ochel nefesh. That's the chiddush of the Ran and the Nemuka Yosef. That's what they suggest. Okay, says the Gemara. Weiter. Ahu Gavra, the Chaval Sakina Dashkafta Mechavre. There was a guy that took a shechita knife as a mashkon from his friend. Asal Kameda Abaye, so he went to Abaye. Amle Zila Hadre, the Havile Kli Shosim Ochel Nefesh. Abaye said, you better give that back to him because that's a Kli that's used for Ochel Nefesh. I mean, they shecht an animal with it, so that's something that's clearly used directly for Ochel Nefesh. You need to go give that back to the guy that you took it from. Now Tos points out that it's dafka kli that's used for ochel nefesh, but actual food itself you are allowed to take as a mashkon, which is ironic. He says nir l'ri dafka kelim, aval ochlin atzman mutalachbal. right? But the food itself, that you could take as a mashkon. It was dafka because it was the kelim that are used for ochel nefesh. That's what you're not allowed to take. But either way, Abaye said to him, that's an invalid mashkon. You can't hold that over him at all. You got to give it back. He owes you money. So v'ta, kum bedin Allah. Go sue him for the money. But that's it. You're going to have to, if you think he owes you $1,000, you'll have to sue him for the full $1,000 and bring a raya that he owes you the full $1,000. You don't get an upper hand on any part of that money based on this mashkom. You have to return this mashkom. Rava Amar Rava says, no. Lo tzarek l'mekum bedina Allah v'yachalitun ad kadei demehen. Rava says that based on what the value of the mashkon is, so that much he has the upper hand on. He doesn't have to bring a raya for that amount of money, because he can always say, look, this shechita knife was mine, and therefore, and if it's worth $500, so he could say, so good, so $500, I could have just said is mine, so I'm not going to have to bring a raya to tell you that you owe me those $500. They only have to bring a raya on the remaining $500. So frankly, Gemara, Abaye, lesley ha'isvara, does Abaye not hold of the svara of Rava, that having the mashkon in hand is helpful in terms of that you don't have to bring a raya ad kedei demein, you only have to bring a raya for the balance, but not for the actual value of the mashkon that you have. Maishna mehanu izi dachli chushla benarda. Isn't this exactly the case that Abaye dealt with of goats that were eating chushla, which is peeled barley? They were eating chushla in Naharda, and the chushla didn't belong to the owner of the goats. So va'asa mara de chushla v'tavas lahu. The owner of the chushla came and grabbed the goats as payment for his chushla. He confiscated the goats. And he had a taina that your goats ate X amount of chushla from my field, and Avuah de Shmuel said that he could make a taina ad kedei demayan, meaning that up until the value of the goats themselves, he does have the upper hand. So does Abaye not hold of that whole svara? It seems that everyone would hold of that whole svara. Since there are no edim that it was a mashkon, again, if there were edim that it was given as a mashkon, so you don't have the upper hand. If you look at Rashi and Rava Amar, right? Rashi says explicitly, Rava Amar, kivin de mashkenei ve'ein edim shemashkeno. There are no edim that it was given as a mashkon. Hayachalit on lekuchi biyadi. He could have always said, this shechita knife, these goats, they belong to me. So lo tzarich l'mekam bedinei lavei dekana le'mashkon l'shav avalit alak de damav. Right, so he's not going to have to bring rayas about the value of the goats or the value of the shechita knife that he had taken. That he'll be able to get without clear rayas. It's going to be everything else, the balance that he's going to need to prove. So does Abaye not hold of this? So says the Gemara, big difference. Hasam lav midi da avdala ushuli lo gurehu. Hacha midi da avdala ushuli lo gurehu. When it comes to goats are not things that people lend out to each other very frequently. So if a guy has a goat that originally belonged to somebody else, it's a good raya that it's his. And that and if there was no edim that it was given as a mashkon, he'd be able to taina that it was his, and therefore he only has to really sue on the balance. He doesn't have to sue on the value of the goats themselves. But when you have an item that's normally rented or lent out, so you can't say, oh look, I'm in possession of this item, and since I'm in possession of it, it must be that it was mine. I could always find the lekuchi biyadi. No, if it's something that people always rent out, you have a book that's a library book, so you can't say, oh, it's in my possession. Possession is 9/10 of the law. Lekuchi biyadi. No, everyone knows that the book was printed so that it could be lent out and that it could be used in that way. So the fact that you're in possession of it right now does not indicate that you are the owner of it. So the shechita knife would be in that category of something that's meant to be lent out frequently, and therefore it's not any sort of proof. That's Abaye's point of view. The shalok Rav Huna bar Avin, because Rav Huna bar Avin taught, devarim asuyin lahashal lahaske varm lekuchen in biyadi, einu neman. Anything that's made to be rented or lent out, and you claim, oh, I bought it, you see, I have it in my possession, so I must have bought it. So such a claim is baseless. You can't make such a claim that it's lekucha biyadi, because it's obviously, it's meant to be given over in that way. How do we define what is asuyin lahasha lahaskir? So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Torah Minit on Perches Halacha Tes the following lashon. Says the Rambam, al tite bein dvarim asuyin lahashil, lebein dvarim shedarkon lahashil. The Rambam says the Gemara was very meduyak in its lashon. The Gemara didn't say dvarm shedark on the hashil. The Gemara said dvarm haasuyin la hashil. And there's a big difference between the two. Shedavka dvarm haasuyim la hashil eino ne'eman. It's only things that are made to be lent out that you're not going to be believed on. Veheim kelim shenasu lechadchila kidei lahashilan. Kigon ayaros hagadolos. Things that are produced in order to be lent out. Things that are not, when they're made, when they're produced, they're not produced to be owned by private owners. They're produced for the sake of being lent out. And that's asuyin lahashil. Things that are normal to lend out, but are produced primarily to be owned by an individual that who's going to hang on to them, and it just happens to be that it's not abnormal to lend something like that out, so such an item is not dvar ma'asuyin lahashil laskir. Dvar ma'asuyin lahashil laskir means that its primary function is to be lent out. That's what it's always used for, which would be very limited, meaning let's say a car. So a car is asuyin lahashil laskir. There are plenty of companies that make it's dark on lahashil laskir. There are plenty of companies that make a good living. Renting cars, but cars are not produced lahashil laskir. They're produced for private ownership. So it's the Rambam really limits the concept a lot. There has to be asuyin lahashil laskir. The Ravid, as one may have predicted, disagrees. He says, no, asuyin lahashil laskir means that it's normal, meaning the whole svara is that you don't have a very strong claim when you say l'kuchad ein biyadi, because it's very likely that just because it's in your possession, it's very likely that it came into your possession through she'ela or schiras as opposed to through ownership. The Ravaran Kotler, the Mishnah Rabbi Aaron, explains the Machlokas that the Ravid holds that since the Bailim HaRishonim are the Marakama, so the one who's Machzik needs a Hochacha that what he's holding on to is actually his. So anything that it's Efshar that was lent to him, his possession of it is not a strong enough Hochacha to undo the Marakama. It was a Marakama who's really the Muchzak. The fact that I'm holding on to it, if it's at least likely or there's a decent possibility that I only borrowed it, so my tefisa is not a good enough hochacha. Whereas the Rambam says, no, the marakama is not the muchzak, the guy holding on to it is the muchzak. So the level of raya that you need, that it's yours, is not that great. Right? So the Rambam would say that the toface doesn't need a raya for his tefisa, it's anyone who wants to take it away from the toface. He's the one that needs a stronger raya. So if the marakama wants to take it away from the toface, he's going to have to say, look, that's an item that's asui lahashil laskir, that it's 99%, it's always used for she'ela and schiras, and therefore his tefisa shouldn't help him. But otherwise, the tefisa is very strong, and the tefisa would help. Good, that's the svara of Abaye. For Rava, leslei ha'svara, asks the Gemara Vayter, does Rava not hold of such a svara? What, Rava doesn't hold of asui lahashil laskir, that when you have a kli that's asui lahashil ask you that the fact that you're toface, it doesn't mean anything. Rava apik zuga de sarbala the safra da agadita miyasmi. Rava actually confiscated wool shearers and safra da agadita svarim of agadita from Yisomim, b'dvarim asuyin lahashil lahaskir, on the grounds that they are items that are asuyin lahashil lahaskir, and therefore the tfisa on them means nothing to him, because these are items that are very frequently lent out. So doesn't Rava hold of that concept of asuyin lahashil lahaskir as well? So amalcha Rava would respond, Hanami kivan demei pagma kapti inchi v'lo moshli. He says, no, you have to understand that the shechita knife is not something that's asuyin lahashil lahaskir. That's the fundamental. The machlokas of Abaye and Rav is not about the halacha. They both agree that something that's asur lahashil laskir tefisa means nothing. If it's not asur lahashil laskir tefisa means a lot, and you're able to be toin ar kedei demeyan. No, what they disagree about is a shechita knife something that's asur lahashil laskir. Rav says that since a pagam could happen in the knife, the knife could develop a nick very easily, and that will destroy the whole effectiveness of the knife, so people are very touchy about their shechita knives. They don't like to lend them out so easily. It's in fact true. You speak to shochtim are very, very particular about their shechita knives. They don't like to just lend them out and use it for other things and use it as to spread whatever. to spread margarine on their bagel. They're going to be very careful with the shechita knife. Shechita knife is something that they never want to use for anything else, because obviously it's very important that it doesn't have any nicks on the knife. Okay, just a major tosos on the bottom over here says that Rava took away the zuga de sarbla and safra de gadita, frek tosos vitema. The hacham mashma mitam da asuin lahashu lahasu luchud. Our Gemara seems very clear that as long as it's an item that's asu lahash lahasir, it's an item that's meant to be lent or rented out, so that's enough to say tefisa doesn't matter. You cannot claim that it's yours just because you're tofis it, just because you have it in hand. The fact that it's asu lahash lahasir means that your tefisa is garbage. That's what our Gemara seems to indicate. However, ubeperikol and shvayim in mesach shvuas gabei ra'u shehit min kelim tachas knafav. If you see a guy that's hiding kelim under his jacket, va'amar, and he says lukuchen hein, I bought these kelim, they're mine. Eino ne'aman kamar, we say that he's not believed. And says the Gemara, why is he not believed? Because we're talking about a very specific case. We're talking about these kelim used to belong to a guy who doesn't normally sell his items. It's not like he owns a store where he sells things. And these are kelim that are not normal to hide under your jacket. What's he hiding? And this is a person that we don't really trust so much. He's not such a trustworthy guy. So that's why we don't believe him to say l'kuchnein biyadi. Avaleka kolhani ne'aman. If you're missing any of these things, then he would be believed. Meaning, if you were either a trustworthy guy, or it were a balabayas that normally sells things, or it were kelim that are normal to hide, he'd be believed to say lukuchen en biyadi. And then the Gemara says, v'lo amrin ela bedvar ma'asuin lahashul lahastir, that all of that is talking about assuming that it's something that's asur lahashul lahastir. Assuming it's something that is normally lent and rented out and not always sold. So the implication of that Gemara is the fact that it's asur lahashul lahaskir is not enough to say that your tefisa is garbage. If you want to say that tefisa is garbage, it needs to be asur lahashul lahaskir plus the mocher, the balabais doesn't normally sell these things, plus we don't trust the guy who claims he bought it because he's not a trustworthy guy, plus the fact that these kelim are normal to hide. You need all of those factors in order to say that the tefisa is meaningless. Asur lahashul lahaskir doesn't work alone. It's directly against our Gemara. So it says Tosfos a big chiddush. V'nir l'Rabbeinu Tam ki girsas asfarim yishanim v'chein rach u'bekulu lo amran ela bedvarim she'ein asuyin lahashul lahaskir. That you have to change the gears in that Gemara and Shavuos. The Gemara really means to say, when is tefisa meaningless? When does tefisa do nothing for you? Two possibilities. Either it's something that's asu lahashu lahastir, then tefisa will do nothing, or you have the combination of the other three factors. That this guy doesn't normally sell, we don't trust this guy who claims he bought, it's not a cleave that's normally hidden. The combination of all those three factors would also be enough to say that your tefisa is meaningless. Not that you need all four in order to say tefisa is meaningless. It's either asur lahashul lahaskir or the other three combined to say that the tefisa is meaningless. And that way, our Gemara is not against the Gemara in Shavuos. That's one yisod that Tosfos deals with. Second yisod Tosfos deals with, second question, Vim Tomar, Tahacha Mashma Disaparim Asuyin Lahashka Lahasir Afilu Sifra Dagadita Svarim, not Saparim, Svarim Asuyin Lahashka Lahasir Afilu Sifra Dagadita Kolshkein Shar Svarim. He says, over here, the implication in our Gemara is that Svarim are items that are meant to be lent out and rented out. And if it's true of Sifra Dagadita, Tosfos makes an assumption, Kal v'chomer, it's going to be true of other Svarim as well. That these are things that are meant to be lent and rented out. In fact, the Gemara in Ksubis supports that idea. Problem is, there's a Gemara in Baba Kama that seems to go against that. Gemara in Baba Kama and Daf Kuf Yudalid Hamakir Kelev Usvarav Biaracher Im Yatzal Hashem Gneva Biir Yishava Kama Nasan Viyital. That if you recognize your Svarim in someone else's possession, if the guy, if it was known that your items, that your Svarim were stolen from you, the guy can just swear how much he paid for them and he gets to keep them. Vim Lav Kalemenu Shani Yomer Machram Liachav Lakham Zeimenu. But otherwise, you can't take them away from him, because we can always assume that you sold these farm to somebody else, and this guy innocently bought those farm from somebody else. But my yeah, neman zel lomar nignavuli bimigo di bayamar hishaldavlach. Why can't the original owner of the Sfarim say, believe me that this guy stole my Sfarim from me, that these Sfarim were stolen from me, Migo, that I could have said I lent them to him? Meaning, if Sfarim are in fact Dvarim Asuyin Lahashul Lahaskir, as we are trying to label them in our Gemara, and as the Gemara in Ksubis labels them, that shouldn't you be Naaman and Amigo with Amigo in that Gemara in Baba Kama? Meaning, doesn't the Gemara in Baba Kama seem to suggest that Sfarim are not Asuyin Lahashul Lahaskir? So the truth is, if you look at Rashi in Mesechus Shavuos Daf Mem Vav, where the Gemara also has this line about the Sifra Dagadita, Rashi says that there's a flaw in Tosus's question. And we saw the logic already. Tosus made a leap. Tosus said, if Sifra Dagadita are Asuyin Lahashul Lahaskir, Kol Shekein Shar Svarim. There's your chilik, Rashi says. Tosfos made an assumption that if you would normally lend out Sifra Dagadita, you would for sure normally lend out other Sfarim. Rashi says that's not true. Rashi in Shavuos says Vidafka Sifri Dagadita She'ein Adam Asui Lilmud Behem Tadir. It's not the Sifra Dagadita aren't things that people were constantly using. It wasn't like the Daf Yomi edition of the Arshul Gemara where you bring it with you every day and you're constantly using it. Aval Shar Sfarim Ein Asui Lashkula Asul Fisham Skalkulin Kama Shashanir. But other Sfarim that you do use more consistently, you wouldn't rent out and lend out as much because you don't want it to get ruined because you constantly need it. Something that you use once in a blue moon, so such a thing, you'll lend out because it's something that gets very little use and you're not as concerned about it being destroyed. That's how Rashi says in Maseches Shavuos and Daf Mem Vav and Beis to answer this kasha that Tosfos raises. Okay, Tosfos gives his own answers. Tosfos says that near Rabbeinu Tam, Tosamari b'makirim shein balas farm ragel ahashilosan shein biyado. Right, Tosfos says that it must be that we know that this balas farm doesn't normally lend out his farm. That even though normally sfarim einachinami are normally lent out and rented out, it must be that we're talking b'chiyah gavna that it's a guy who doesn't lend out his farm. Tosfos gives a second answer. Ulamari arav dodi near el tarets. Amigo lahotzi lo aminan. That ain't a chinami. You could have said amigo, but amigo never works to be motzi. It never works to take away from somebody. So since amigo, we wouldn't say amigo lahotzi. That's why you don't have that amigo in the Gemara Maseches Bava Kama. Okay, Hadron Alecha Makabel. We now start the 10th and final parak of Maseches Bava Metzia, just a few days away from being Simon Maseches Bava Metzia. So let's get started. This parak is going to be about different situations where you have people who split a house. A house is two floors, and it's a two-family house. One family lives upstairs, the other family lives downstairs. Now, not all the Mishnayos are talking about the same type of arrangement. Some of the Mishnayos talk about where the house is owned jointly. Someone owns the top floor, someone else owns the bottom floor. Other Mishnayos in this parak are talking about not where it's owned jointly, but where one person owns the entire house, and he rents out the top floor to somebody else. He has a tenant in the top floor. The first Mishnah is very clear that we're talking about the first kind of case. Habayis va'aliyah shel shnayim. It belongs to two people. How does it belong to two people? They either buy it together. Achim sheyarshu. Their father owns the whole house. He dies and he leaves the house to his two sons and they split the house, they split the Yerusha, one of them has the top floor, one of them has the bottom floor. So anyway, the case is, Abayis v'aliyah shel shnayim, shenaflu. And then the house fell down. So they all want to take the materials, they were expensive stones that were used to build the house, so they want those building materials. Shneim cholkin be'etzim ba'avanim ba'afar. So they divide the etzim, the avanim, and the afar. They divide the building materials between them. V'roen elu avanim asuyus l'shtaber. And when they divide, they have to take a careful look at which stones are more likely to have broken. Meaning, depending on what the house broke from. If a wrecking ball came and crashed into the top of the house, so then obviously the stones wherever the wrecking ball hit are most likely the broken stones. So if it hit on the top floor, so then the guy in the top floor is most likely the one who owns the broken stones, and the guy in the bottom floor most likely owns the whole stones. Wherever the impact was is likely where it happened. If a wind blew and blew the house over, so the guy in the top floor probably has the broken stones because his stones had the furthest to fall, right? So they probably broke. Rashi spells all this out. If there was a problem fundamentally in the structure, there was a structural problem in the house and it crumbled from underneath, so then it's likely that the structural problem was in the foundation stones, it was in the bottom stones. And the stones on the top were not the ones where there was a problem. The whole house would have caved in if the top stones were the problem. So then the broken stones likely belong to the bottom guy and not to the top guy. So that's all it means. You have to use seichel, bring an expert in to figure out who likely owns the broken stones and who likely owns the whole stones. If one of them recognizes some of his stones, notlan v'oloslo min hacheshbon. He could take those stones that he recognizes as his own, and we count that into the cheshbon. We have to count into the cheshbon what he took. We don't then divide the remaining stones equally. We then divide the remaining stones based on the knowledge that this guy already took X amount of stones. The Gemara will explain this. So it says the Gemara, wait a second, midiktani roin, from the fact that it says we try to analyze how the house fell and who likely has the broken stones. Sounds like we know how it fell, that we can analyze and we can tell how it fell, whether it fell by falling from within or it fell from being hit from the side and therefore knocking over, in which case the top stones are more likely to have broken. Then why does the Reisha say that we divide it? Why don't we analyze how it fell and say, well, look, if it fell based on an impact from the side where the whole thing tipped over, so then the top stones are the ones that are broken. And if it fell from within because there was a problem in the foundation, so then it's the bottom stones that are the ones that are broken. Why would you say Chalkin? Doesn't Chalkin imply that they divide the broken stones and the whole stones evenly? Why would you do that if you're able to figure out how it fell? So it says, Mar Lotzricha Denafel Belele. Now the case is, in the Reisha, the case must be that it fell at night, and therefore we didn't see how it fell, so we're unable to really know how it fell, and that's why we divide it evenly. So it says, Mar, okay, V'luchsinu B'tzafra. The sun will rise, wait till the morning, bring an expert in, and he'll be able to tell, based on how the stones are positioned. He should be able to tell how it had initially fallen. Answers the Gemara, Dipaninu. No, you already moved aside, they already cleared aside the stones, so it's not in their original position. It's like in a crime scene, you're not allowed to touch anything. You have to leave everything just as is, so that people, so that the investigators will be able to know how things happened. Once you move things around, they'll never be able to put it back together. So you're not going to, once they swept all the stones aside, forget it. They're never going to be able to figure it out. So why don't we find out who swept all these stones aside and ask him what he found. And then based on his testimony of what the scene looked like, we'll be able to reconstitute and figure out exactly what happened. So the truth is, I saw in Birei Adaf, he quotes the Mayanei HaChachma, who asks, why would you believe a guy? Meaning he's an Eid Echad, this is Dina Mamanus. You don't believe in Eid Echad when it comes to Dina Mamanus. Right? It sounds like Vilishai Lei, not Vilishai Luhu. Not that there were multiple people involved in sweeping it aside. It sounds like it was one guy. And you're just going to ask him and believe him? Why would you be allowed to believe such a guy? So the Mayanos HaChachma says that still, since he's an Eid Echad is enough to be Mechayev Shvua, and both Shutvim over here only have a Taina Shema, because no one really knows whose stones are who, so we can apply the concept of Mitok Shein Yachli Shavim Mishalim. So regarding that, we'd believe the Eid Echad in order to make them pay, because he would be enough to be Mechayev Shvua. It's just no one could take a Shvua over here because no one knows what happened. So therefore, we're going to determine payments and who gets what based on this Eid Echad, based on the concept of Mitok Shein Yachal Yishava Mishalem. He quotes here from the Sefer Perus Te'ena, which is one of these Achronos Shesvarim that are like Dafyomi aids that give a nice Mar Makomos relating to the Dafyomi, who's Miyashev based on the Maharik that's quoted in the Shev Shmaitza. The Shev Shmaitza and Shmaitza Vav, Shar Gimel says that an Eid Echad helps when it's an Eid Echad could work for Dinei Mamonos when he's not meyed against the Cheskas Mamon. As long as he's not going up against the Cheskas Mamon, he would work for Dinei Mamonos. Okay, fine. So anyway, why don't you ask the guy? He says, Gemara depaninu b'nei Rosh Hashanah v'azul li'alma. We don't know who swept it up. Someone from the Rosh Hashanah swept it up and has since left us. So v'lechzi b'rishus d'man yasmi lavi idach ha'motzi mechaveir alavraya. Why don't we look at where the stones are sitting right now and let the burden of proof be on the other guy? Says Gemara, l'tzrichid yasmi b'chatzir d'travayu. It's sitting in both of their chatzeros. Inami b'rish Hashanah where it's in Rosh Hashanah v'yaseh m'shut from chayi gav n'lokapti adadi. Or whose chatzir they're sitting in is irrelevant because shutfim are generally mochel in this type of thing. So the fact that it's in one guy's field doesn't mean anything. The Mishnah went on to say that if one guy recognizes his stones, he can take those stones that he recognizes. Ask the Gemara v'alamatoin. What does the other guy say? In pshita, if he says, yeah, okay, I agree with you, those are yours, of course he you can take those stones. If the other guy doesn't say it's okay, then why can't he take it? It must be that the other guy says, I don't know. Isn't this a tiyufta on Rav Nachman? Because if one guy says, I do know these are my stones, the other one says, I don't know, and we let him take them, what's that another word for? Bari v'shema, bari adif. We let the guy with the tainus bari come and take it. Isn't that a tiyuf tan Rav Nachman? Didmar mani libi al kavalomer eni yodea. If one guy Reuven says Shimon you owe me $100, Shimon says I don't know. Rav Huna, Rav Yudam Richayev, Rav Huna, Rav Yudah say Richayev because bari v'shem bari adif. But Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan Amri Pater, Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan saying be Pater. The tainus bari doesn't win. Sans says Gemara no. Kedam Rav Nachman going sheyesh esek shvua b'neim. Achanan going sheyesh esek shvua b'neim. Over here you're chayev v'shvua anyway, and since you're going to be chayev v'shvua and you can't be. Be nishba because you don't know. That's why the tainus bari is going to beat you. Hey chidami yesek shvua. What's an example where you chayv a shvua over here? Kedarava dam rava manu biyak kavalomer in lchabiyadi el chamishim v'ashare in yodeya. If someone says you owe me 100 and I say I owe you 50, the rest I'm not sure about. So I'm a moda b'mitzas. I'm chayv a shvua, but I can't take the shvua because I'm not sure about the rest. So mitok sheni achlishav mishal, and that's why you have to pay. Va'olos lo min achesbon. Let's just get to the mishnah. Va'olos lo min achesbon. We said that when you take those stones for yourself, the rest. Is olam in acheshbon. So Sava Rava Lameimer l'fichesbon shvuros. Rava thought that that meant that when I take the whole stones that I recognize to be mine, so I'm now not going to have to take as many shvuros. Now we're going to split the remaining shvuros and shlemos on evenly, and this is going to take the place of shvuros that I otherwise would have taken. Alma kivin damrei niyodei re'etzfei. Sounds like the guy saying he doesn't know ruins his chances. Abai says, I could have said the opposite svara. If the guy recognizes these stones and not the other shlemos, maybe that's a raya that the other shlemos don't belong to him. And all of the other shlemos belong to the other guy. That when he says, I recognize these shlemos, that goes into his cheshbon of his chelek of the shlemos that he's going to take. He's still going to have to take just as many shvuros, it's just that the remaining shlemos will go to the other guy. Then what did it help him to identify these stones as his own? If anyway, he's just going to receive the same amount of shlemos at the end of the day that he would have received had he not identified anything. Maybe these are wider stones. Maybe they're stronger stones. Whatever it is, these stones might be better than the other shlemos, that he might have a particular liking for them. Okay, we'll pick up from the Mishnah tomorrow.